Welcome to the Coaching Coordinator Podcast. I am joined by a repeat guest here today, a guy I'm excited to talk to all the time about quarterback play, quarterback coach, trainer, Will Hewlett. Will, always great to talk ball with you.
Man, thanks for having me on again, Keith. It's great to be back and always love these opportunities to help learn and share some more stuff through this format.
Will, we had the opportunity to talk a little bit in San Antonio at AFCA and a few informal conversations there just about coaching the game and developing quarterbacks. You know, kind of we went through a lot of stuff, ran the gamut as far as topics there. But, you know, wanted to just get an update to start with some of the trends you're seeing and some of the better things you have been getting into in terms of quarterback training and quarterback development.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's a great time to be in the industry. I do feel like there's been a really positive shift with coaches. And I think, you know, I think what Patrick Mahomes is doing and the success of what Baker Mayfield has done. And now there's this huge emphasis on, you know, finding that QB whisperer, you know, or just a guy that's been around a lot of great quarterbacks. And, you know, these guys are getting big jobs like, you know, Cliff Kingsbury and you know, look at Graham Harrell from North Texas, who's another Texas Tech guy, just got hired at USC. So I think, you know, there's a shift in this QB centric, world we're in, and it's kind of ramped up a little bit heavier, understanding that we know we need help developing and giving these quarterbacks more resources to maximize their potential. Because it seems like the teams that are having success, you know, are having the best play at that position. And we're seeing things that maybe we haven't seen before or haven't paid attention to before. So one of the biggest shifts is this offseason, I've had more conversations with position coaches and coordinators at the collegiate level in terms of restructuring their individual time and, you know, season focus for their quarterbacks. And it's been fun for me because, you know, this is the rabbit hole I've been down for you know, a couple years now. And there's definitely a larger emphasis on, you know, being aware of quarterback mechanics. You know, I think with, you know, kind of industry leaders and experienced coaches out there, you've got the Tom Houses of the world and Darren Slacks and Kenny Mastrolis and people that have been, you know, kind of in their area and innovating in many different ways. It's spread over to the college game and the professional game because all these quarterbacks are utilizing these resources in the off season. And so now it's really, hey, how can we understand more about the throw and how to not maybe, you know, mess my guys up or improve them. So I do feel like there's been a shift and a focus consciously by coaches to really understand the mechanics of the position a little bit more. And then, you know, how do we best get the most out of our QBs through the season? You know, like, what am I really doing with my individual time? Am I going to spend, you know, 10 or 15 minutes every day of practice shuffling through bags and then hitting a stationary target? You know, is that representative enough of the game? Is there something else that we could be doing to improve that? And so, you know, my time and resources and energy have been, you know, how can I better utilize that time to help quarterbacks transition into playing football at a higher level? And that seems to be the general focus that I felt.
Yeah, I think one of the things we talked about, and you mentioned to me a couple years back when we were shooting some stuff in Indianapolis, that you kind of had shifted a little bit in the way you were training quarterbacks. And I guess the way I would best describe it is looking at things that were a little bit more fluid rather than kind of this robotic type of we're going to train every quarterback to do everything precisely the right way. And, I mean, we see time and time again on Sundays, you know, guys like Patrick Mahomes out there just doing things that, you know, if I listen to all the things maybe that I see on YouTube and how you're supposed to coach a quarterback mm-hmm. and the drills that we run through and things like, you know, that back foot always moves first. Well, he's out there doing it wrong. Yeah. So what the heck's up with that guy?
Yeah, exactly. And that was it, right? Like, if you really dig deep into why we're coaching things, you know, in coaching, it's very easy to get caught up we want to simplify everything. And so it's transferable to the athlete. But what ends up happening is we have a focus point, maybe mechanically, that becomes the most important thing we coach. And then that makes everything else not as important. And what I found is that, you know, you can't overemphasize the backstroke, you know, with your back arm, more than what the lead arm is doing or more than what the hips are doing. So, you know, all human movement is driven through the center out. So, you know, proximal to distal, movement, basically meaning your big joints, your hips, you know, and your torso, they have to move first, and then everything else is kind of reactive off of that. And so we tend to coach, from the outside in, which, you know, has some validity in when you're trying to maybe, you know, help a kid fix something that's been broken. But, you know, if we keep stability, as a core principle, meaning that we want to create stability through all movement, and we're talking even, you know, under pressure or outside of the pocket, you know, stability, and then the concept of variability, which really ties into, you know, multiple arm angles and different positions we're throwing from. And, you know, and that's not new in terms of, you know, coaching, but I think the emphasis as coaches is to, you know, block coach things, get it very simple. We're just going to rep this till we get it right. And then you go ahead and watch the game and, you know, your kid does something completely off script and makes an amazing throw and he didn't get his back leg around like you've been coaching. And then what do you tell him? You know, like, great throw, but, try to snap your hips harder, you know? And so there's this disconnect with that coaches struggle with. And so what I really understood is that, you know, athletes are problem solvers and they will self-discover, a solution. Sometimes that needs guidance and that's your job as a coach. You know, if you're working with a 10-year-old quarterback, you know, he doesn't have the physical strength and awareness to overcome some of those problems. But, you know, that doesn't mean that we should drown them in you know, really isolated drill patterns that, you know, are going to make things clunky. You just have to let them evolve as they get a little bit stronger and know that, you know, errors are going to help. The strength really helps correct deficiencies in mechanics, you know, and that just comes with age. And so sometimes it's just, you know, using a concept of having guidelines and not strict rules and understanding that, you know, human movement is pretty, you know, optimized as it is. And so when we think that moving your back foot first makes the release faster, and you know, we make everything in our coaching revolve around that, you lock athletes into movement strategies that aren't true. And again, you know, Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers and Baker Mayfield and these, you know, quarterbacks that are making these plays that are awesome, but somehow, you know, they're just talented. So we won't coach any of that stuff. But what you find is, I think that if you give kids a little bit of freedom to fail and push their limits and try different things, you'll get the best out of them. And you know, that's I guess philosophically how I approach the position, you know, keep things fluid, understand that stability matters, but also that they need variability in their movements as well. You know, variability is simply just, there's going to be differences. You cannot repeat every rep the same. And the game, every play is going to be different. So you have to embrace that.
Yeah, and I think when I take that learning down to the lower levels and how we're training mm-hmm. young kids to be quarterbacks, you know, before we got to talking here on the podcast, we're talking a little bit about athlete development. And you know, I was telling you about a conversation I had with a sports scientist, and he was talking about baseball in the Dominican Republic, and you know why these kids are, you know, Major League goes over there and signs a kid, he's 16 years old, and how is this, you know, this country, this island, producing so many good baseball players, some of the best in the world? And he pointed to free play, unstructured play, that there's not a coach out there criticizing every single movement. When I think back to, you know, being a younger coach and figuring it out for myself, how I coach kids, that sometimes I would kind of overwhelm their mind, where all of a sudden they're trying to do everything kind of robotically and they look awkward. And it's like, kid, just throw the ball, you know, and you figure it out. Okay, I gotta pull it back for this guy. I can't coach every little thing, or he's just thinking all the time, and that's not good for anything in athletics.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, we have, as coaches, we're armed with knowledge, and it's like we want to give our athletes all this knowledge, and we just dump it. And you know, if you think of it like a computer, they just don't have the RAM to process everything the way, you know, we do. And I think what coaches would find if they put themselves in that situation, they'd struggle as well. So there's a path that, you know, and the example of baseball is fantastic. It's the same in soccer, this concept of free play and self-discovery. You know, I think that letting an athlete, you know, help figure out some of their own problems, you know, and when you learn something implicitly, when you self-discover something, that sticks better than anything else. You know, explicit learning is when a coach is really verbalizing and give them very strict instructions, and there's a place for that. But you know, once that ball snapped, you know, if they have a system and you know, a guided set of rules that they can play within, I think you'll get you know, much more out of them. And then also we think about how many things, you know, are chaotic in the game. You know, some of the things that I've experimented with in scenarios are, you know, maybe a condensed game of 7-on-7, you know, where you actually let the quarterback, you know, call the routes, and you're just playing in a more compressed field. It's kind of like the ball skills of indoor soccer players, because of the condensed space, is in, you know, increased because they need to be more creative. And so allowing some of that creativity into our athletes in the football position, it could be receivers running routes, it could be, you know, quarterbacks with different drops. And you know, sometimes you got to guide it a little bit, but sometimes letting it go is the best thing they can do. And you'll see that stuff come out in games all the time.
Moving that forward and thinking about the older athlete, and a lot of our listeners are high school and college coaches. You mentioned looking at practice and even just restructuring what we do in our individual periods.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the quarterbacks, I always found coaching at the collegiate level, like I had some time to warm them up in the beginning, and then our services were needed all over the field. And then we might steal some time during special teams or things like that to get a little bit more indie. But, you know, what are your guidelines right now for structuring the individual in? And then I'll ask you a follow-up question afterwards about everyday drills. But go ahead and give us your kind of guidelines for structuring individual.
Well, I think that here's what's interesting. And one of the conversations I had with a state championship quarterback, state championship high school out of California, Ryan Partridge, over there at Liberty High School. They won it all this year. He's got a super talented quarterback. And it was really interesting. We were having a conversation. I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, but he said towards the end of the year, they almost got rid of indie time with the quarterbacks because they wanted to do stuff that helped them win. And to me, you know, I'm like, that's really interesting. You know, why didn't you just do that at the beginning of the year? Mm-hmm. And I think what that leads us to understand is that, you know, where we start at the beginning of the year and where we finish are two different spots. You know, there's a natural maybe, you know, regression in certain things, you know, fundamentals with athletes through the season, but there's also a progression mentally where they start to really intuitively, you know, become more efficient in their gameplay. But it makes me ask the question, well, what are we really doing in Indy time that's helpful? And so if we truly look at Indy time, there's a couple purposes of this. Let's assume that the quarterbacks have warmed up and their arms are warm. But if we use that time to help, you know, better craft some things that are going to transfer into gameplay, then I think it might be a little bit more beneficial. And I'll tell you some of the things that are just, you know, have very little carryover, if any. And I think a lot of it is because we love routine, and we think, you know, having a strict routine is going to help them be proficient. But is it just helping them be proficient at the routine that you're doing, or is it help making them a better football player? And so, you know, when there's no stimulus and we're just working on keeping your pace wide and shuffling through bags or stepping over bags, you know, I mean, listen, Aaron Rodgers does that in practice, but, you know, does it make him better at what he does? Maybe. I think that what happens is that, you know, it reaches a point very quickly in the season where there's just no more benefit, you know, that we're going to get from that. Now, maybe you've, on a high school team, you've got a range of skill levels. And so for the lower end guys where they can slow it down and focus, you know, on being more stable and working on the mechanics, there are some benefits there of very controlled, planned drills. But again, I think it's quickly limited. So I try to look at it like, what can we do that stimulates the vision of a quarterback? So, you know, incorporating stuff where they have to reset, you know, you call eye discipline. I mean, they've got to take their eyes from one read to the other, or they're focusing on, you know, tying a fundamental throw. Maybe it's just crossover plant throw, and then setting their hips opposite the way that their, you know, a coach turns. And so they're reading cues. They're getting cues that they're going to see in the game and applying that and training that into what they're doing. I think we look at, you know, Indy time as drills, but we should maybe look at Indy time as, you know, as much for, you know, mental stimulation and letting them struggle through some randomized movements, you know, to help them get prepared for the game. You know, a lot of the times we want success through very controlled drills. You know, it's like, great, we did a great job there, guys. We all hit the target. But again, is that applicable to gameplay? So, you know, I like anything where we can create movement, where the quarterback has to reset. He has to, you know, track something with his eyes. He has to reset his vision somewhere, where there's, you know, stimulus that's random. So they can truly, get a feel for the different types of throws that they're going to have to make. And I think that helps carry over to what they're going to do, when they're taking a snap in the pocket.
Yeah, on our podcast that we did throughout the season, Andy and Ryland and I talked quite a bit about that idea of thinking about how we can put decision-making in our drills. And we equated it to, you know, something simple like running the speed ladder, right? Like a kid mm-hmm. can get really good at running the speed ladder. He can have some incredible feet. You see all the YouTube videos or the social yep. media videos where a guy's like going through the speed ladder, then he goes around this cone, and then he sprints to here, and he backpedals to there, and then catches a football.
Yep.
But he's doing it over and over again. And
yeah.
it begs to the question, well, when do you do it in the game, and where is the
right.
decision-making there? You've trained him essentially to run a course, right, that he's going to do
yep.
this. But and I think that's important. Don't get me wrong. I think at the
yeah.
very beginning, all of our players need to understand, okay, you know, let's take routes on air. Here's how you run
yep.
this route. Of course, there's nothing in front of him. There's nothing impeding him. There's not a defender trying
yep.
to reroute him, et cetera. That once you kind of have that ingrained, now you have to move
yep.
through to how do we insert the decision? How do we put stress on the situation? How do you create the chaotic environment that you're going to see on game day. And I think that's where we start to miss out on in what guys get ingrained in, and they call the everyday drill.
That they
are stuck in. We're doing these drills every single day throughout the season, where I think there needs to be a progression, that we start with some things early, and then it changes. Maybe something like Coach Partridge talked about, where, hey, we're doing things that are competitive. We're doing things that are going to help us win.
Yes, exactly. And I think it's, you know, why do we do everyday drills? Well, you know, it's because my coach did everyday drills and their coach did everyday drills, and it's, you know, and they had successful quarterbacks, so it must work. And so I you know, try to be devil's advocate in all those scenarios. You know, it's like the classic one. If you know, how do you craft your philosophy in coaching? Well, let's say you like your pre-pass high by the ear, and then your quarterback goes out and throws 4,000 yards and, you know, 40 touchdowns. Well, dang, that really helped him. All my quarterbacks are going to hold the ball up there now. And it's like, is that why he was successful? Or is that just, you know, in spite of that, he was successful? So when you look at that with everyday drills, you know, I just like to ask, well, why every day? You know, and if we looked at it more like, for starters, it's flat out boring. Mm-hmm. And it's not stimulating. And it's like, whoa, you know, they don't need stimulation. You listen, football's a game. It's got to be fun. And if your kids are encouraged and look forward to stuff, I think you get more out of them regardless. You know, that's just a mindset that's not helpful. And so, you know, maybe before the season, come up with a bag of different drills. You know, you got, you know, 7 or 8 drills, and we're going to rotate them through the week. And you know, I make a point, if I train a quarterback 3 times over 2 days, our warm-up will be different. The philosophy behind the warm-up will be very similar every time, but there will be some differences every single time just to keep it fresh, you know. And maybe that's the first drill that we start off with. But there is going to be an emphasis on the same, you know, fundamental concepts of stability and variability, but you know, the way we arrive there might be a little bit different. And anytime you can, again, make the athlete process and react to stimulus, that's going to really, really help. And so the idea behind everyday drills is, you know, learning is not linear. We don't all learn just step by step by step by step, but having a progression, you know, that fluctuates between different concepts and different drills, I think is really helpful to keep it fresh and help the athletes, you know, learn. And, you know, like you said, like the latter, I get it. I think there is something to, you know, having some coordination between some pre-planned movements, but I think it very quickly becomes a useless drill for more advanced, you know, high school quarterbacks and so on. I don't think I've used the latter in 6 years, and I've had kids that have had, you know, tons of success. So, you know, we don't want to fall in love with a piece of equipment or anything like that. I think it's just having some freedom and flexibility in what you're doing. And again, some of the things I think coaches, if you force yourself to come up with new things, you know, drills appear out of nowhere, just because of the number of quarterbacks you have. And those are some of the greatest drills you ever come up with. It's like, I've got 4 quarterbacks. Oh my gosh, if I do this drill one more time, they're all going to tune out. What else could I do? And as the drill goes, you can evolve it and add levels to it. And I think that's some of the best coaching to have, you know, making it up as you go along.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I talk all the time about really understanding as you move those mechanics, as you move some of the stuff that is, I guess, for lack of better terms, agnostic of scheme, right? It's not relying upon it, the things you're going to do. You start to work those skills into the different scenarios your player is going to face on a particular concept. And really, if you study the film on any particular pass concept, run concept, you know, for any player who has assignment within there, of those 11 players, there's just a handful of things that are going to be variable. There's a very limited set So yep. A lot of plays, it's three things that could happen. Sometimes maybe yep. up to five, it gets maybe a little bit more complex for the quarterback, but those are still the things that are going to happen again and again and again. You want to train the eye to see those as well as yep. the brain to make the right decision based on it. And when you can start to take the everyday drills and start putting them into context, I think that's yeah. now when you have something that is more stimulating. Because, I mean, for me, you know, I don't know. I would say I guess I stumbled upon getting out of everyday drills a little bit more than anything was that I would get bored coaching them. That I, yeah. as a coach, I needed to be stimulated as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's a huge part of it. You know, everyday drills is your opportunity to kind of disconnect and rest during practice. And that's the wrong approach. I think it's a challenge that where we can find things that are best going to serve our quarterbacks and for all positions for that matter. And it's not, you know, it's not always in, you know, the perfect routine. There's some things, and listen, those guys are going to have success out there. They've had it for 30 years and they've done the same thing over and over and on. That's great. You know, more power to them. But, you know, again, when we're seeing guys do things that we haven't seen before at different levels, I want to aspire to continue to push the limits of the position. I think there's more left in there. We still have not figured out the quarterback position. No one can say that quarterback scouting at the NFL is a done deal. No one can say that they know exactly what they need to do. So until, you know, that's locked in, man, I'm going to keep going and trying to create and come up with new and more creative drills and teaching methods that I think we can help continue to move the sport forward.
Well, in looking at people you've had a chance to collaborate with and becoming part of a group known as the Quarterback Collective, you've been able to work with some of the best in the industry. One in particular who is coaching his team in the Super Bowl this Sunday in Sean McVay. And, you know, in those experiences, what kind of windows did that open to you in your thinking about the quarterback position?
Yeah, it was pretty awesome experience. I got a chance to be up close to McVay and actually partnered up in a film session with Shane Waldron, who's the passing game coordinator for the Rams. And then also a guy that I've known for gosh, about 5 years now is the quarterback coach, Zach Taylor, at the Rams. And we've had, you know, conversations over the years when he was in college and the pros, et cetera. So, you know, you start and then Matt LaFleur as well, who was also 2 years ago, 3 years ago, was the OC with the Rams, and I've got a chance to work directly with him. And so there's certainly a culture, and you know, that's everyone's favorite word right now, but there's a vibe that you get from these guys, and they're all young. And it doesn't mean you can't be older. But what was interesting is with that youth, there's certainly not a lack of experience, a lack of wisdom for how young they were. And I think that's encouraging for younger coaches that may feel that stuff's holding them back. You know, the volume of McVay first started out, I believe, as a QC with the Redskins. I heard stories about how much film that guy broke down, and it was, the guy was a machine. And what you can take away from that is that there's nothing stopping us from really investing time at a deeper level in the game. I think it's funny. I think people are super impressed by his ability to recall plays. I think you'd find there's a bunch of guys out there that can do something similar to that. But really it's a testament to just the amount of film and film study that guy has put in. And so there's no magic, you know, pill that McVay took, right? The guy is a grinder. He, you know, he's a, you can tell he's a machine. You shake his hand and you can feel the intensity, and not in a way that's, you know, that's aggressive or anything. It's just like, this guy is dialed in and is on a mission. And you know, one of the neat things with Shane Waldron, who was the passing game coordinator, and this always says a lot to me, because my background, not being, you know, coming up through the NFL ranks, and specializing in the mechanical side of things and the youth and you know, adolescent development, you know, Shane came up to me and asked if I would partner with him on a presentation, because he wanted to see more of what I was doing. And what that tells me is like, well, this guy's not done learning, right? And so there's this you know, great coaches always seem to look for better ways to do what they're already doing a great job at. You know, why does an NFL coach need to listen to me? He's in the NFL. What's he going to learn? But maybe there is something he can learn. And I think he was open to doing that. It was, you know, really good to see just through the film session, you know, the way that he handled things. You know, there's a very high level of knowledge and depth into, you can tell from just going through a play, what they knew about what was going on in that play. And then, you know, the layers down into practice and so on. There was an interesting conversation about a technique that came up, and Coach Taylor sent me a text, and he was asking about, you know, do we say seat the ball or seed the ball? And apparently this was a big discussion. We're talking like week 14 or something in the facility. Let's figure out what it is, why does everyone call it? Why is it called that one thing? And it was funny to me because, you know, it was something that, you know, why does it matter? But it did matter. And they wanted to come up and make sure we're all on the same page saying the same thing. So that tells me language is important, you know, making sure everybody is on the same page. And I think in the NFL, when you've got so much movement and transition, you know, give Coach Shanahan credit for installing this, you know, philosophy and mindset amongst all these guys. They're all linked in, man. They're all on the same page. They all understand how everybody's coaching everything. And there's this continuity between it all that really speaks to being a part of a team. And I think that's why we see guys like Jared Goff having so much success, because they're just inserted into that. So those were some of the big things that stood out.
So which was it? Was it seat the ball or seed the ball? Because I always say seat.
Yeah, I said seed. I thought seed. That didn't make sense to me. Seed the ball. You know, I like seat. I think that makes a little bit more sense. I think you could probably make the argument any direction, though, which is kind of funny. It's a, you know, one of those weird football terms, like, who came up with that?
Yeah. In looking at those camps, and you guys were working with some high school kids, some of the best in the country. You had the opportunity to see all those guys run drills. I used to write a series of articles on USA Football just called When It Happens on Film, and the whole premise was, you know, I'm running a drill because I can spot where these things are going to happen in a game, and that's what we're working. So, you know, having worked some of these things with these guys in that camp, and then watching the Rams on TV, did you see those things translate to the game for Jared Goff?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think, you know, there was an emphasis on there wasn't any gray area on anything. And there's one actually really interesting observation or experience I had with actually Sage Rosenfeld, who was a, you know, a former NFL quarterback and, you know, kind of, he's played for like 14 play callers that have, you know, have been in the NFL, an insane amount. But what I picked up from him, he was talking about, you know, when we run like a naked boot and how we come out of that. And there was a technique that he described, that I had never heard of how they approach it, of getting away from pressure when the pressure comes into your face. And it's just a really interesting approach. And what was cool was like, okay, there's something that, you know, a guy with, you know, 13, 14 years pro experience and then college and high school, you know, these are some of the little cheat codes that he's been exposed to. And, you know, seeing those little things, it really opened up my eyes to understand that, you know, being around all of these great coaches for so long, you know, you get to pick up all of these awesome little techniques that I think can carry over, and you kind of like pick and choose, and you got to be a sponge. And you think of a guy like McVay, who's been around, you know, the Shanahans and I believe Gruden as well. And, you know, some of the great minds. And, you know, now it's like everyone that's been on his staff is, you know, top of the hiring pool right now, because it's like, we got to get in that system, in that, that program, because whatever they're doing is working. And so, yeah, you could certainly see in the drill segments, and it was nothing, you know, there was nothing that was necessarily revolutionary. It wasn't like, oh, this is mind blowing. And you know, maybe that's because we're not at practice, we're working with high school players, but there was certainly a language, a shared language, and an agreement on how things are done. And then their experience with great quarterbacks, I think, translates into some of the other things that you see on the field.
I love that term you used, cheat code, because, as you know, I've been able to talk with just different coaches at the higher levels, guys who have been in it a long time, guys who are coaching at the elite level. They seem to have those little details here and there, things that you never really thought about. So I have to ask, what was that cheat code that Sage shared with you?
So Sage, it was, I hope I can describe this well, without doing it in person on a video or something, but so as you come out of the boot fake, after the play action, instead of trying to outrun the defensive end and get to the edge, he would actually just run backwards and lose a ton of ground, and then flip the hips and throw to the little check down tight end. And it was something that's almost counterintuitive of what you would think would work, but it was a tried and tested thing at the highest level. It's like, oh no, you don't try and beat him this way. Just regress as fast as you can, run out of it, and then just pop it right over his head. And implementing it into the drill was fantastic. You could see how easy it became just to make this very simple check down throw, because basically if the defensive end was in your face and the tight end was wide open with the way they had this check down set, and it was everything that I never thought you would do, that you did. And that's the stuff you love, man. It was like, huh, you're not going to get that, you know, unless you get around a guy that's played and been around that high level experience. There was one other thing, and I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast last time, but this concept of one and sit that I really loved.
No, I don't think so.
And it was brilliant. And I won't give it away to who said it. And, you know, I don't think the thing was, it was, the simplicity was mind blowing. And it was literally a concept that's used is, you know, when you have a one-on-one matchup that you like, and that one-on-one matchup is almost, you know, you got to have a dude out there to throw it to. They would just scratch the play, the quarterback would, and he would take a one-step drop and just wait for that guy to get open. And I'm like, wait, what? This is like at the NFL, this is happening? I'm like, yeah. And it made me think of, you know, I used to see that with Stafford and Calvin Johnson, right? I used to hear, like, Calvin was remotely close to being one-on-one, you're throwing the ball to him. And so it just kind of goes back to the very core of, like, hey, this thing is just a game, and it is this guy versus this guy. And if you can create those matchups, don't overcomplicate it. Like, take it one step, drop, and wait for him to get open on the out route and throw it to him. It's pretty awesome stuff.
It goes back to almost what we started this with, the idea of free play, man. Those guys are just out there playing backyard football at some point.
Yep, that guy's going to beat that guy, and I'm going to wait for him to do it. There it is. Boom. Touchdown, you know. So they didn't need no magical, you know, two-jet ride, 360, you know, confusing play. It's just like, rip it. I love it.
Well, I'm going to put you on the spot here. You've had the opportunity to work with the offensive guys, the staff with the Rams, and you know they're facing the master this weekend in Bill Belichick. So, what have you seen in this guy, these guys that would say, man, these guys really have a chance in doing it and winning it all?
Man, I think what was really interesting with the playoffs was, you know, I felt like the Rams were as good. I mean, they were so hot at the beginning of the year. It was unreal. And I think the setup there is that, you know, when a team is unbelievable, it's like, did you peak too early? Right. And then they roll through the playoffs and they get into, and they got to fight through the playoffs. And, you know, you could argue about the New Orleans call, you know, sure thing, like, you know, that is what it is. But the fact that they came together, which after looking not as hot maybe as they were early in the year, and still managed to make it into the Super Bowl, then I think that's really a testament to, you know, second half of the season coaching, right? So these guys know how to adjust. They know what they have and still manufacture wins at a very, very high level. You got kind of the flip side of the Patriots where, you know, some of their losses were terrible. I mean, they were looked that bad, you know, versus and maybe the I think it was the Dolphins or something. Just, you know, just not great football. And then obviously, you know, they always get hot and they're pretty pretty impressive. I've learned never to bet against Tom Brady. But, you know, I can't help but think that the matchup and how prepared the Rams are going to be is going to pay off. And I think that, you know, it's going to be an unbelievable game. Are you asking me to say who's going to win?
No, I won't put you on the spot that much, but just what you said right there, just the idea that what is it that you've seen in this guy that these guys, you know, that gives them a chance.
Yeah.
I think you certainly did that there.
Yeah. If you can win when you're not doing everything the same, you know, if you can adapt and evolve and have success, man, that's coaching. That's the value in coaching right there. You know, helping your players overcome those, because things are going to happen in the season. Things are going to go that way.
Well, Will, it was great catching up with you and talking ball here and talking about the Rams and the Super Bowl and all those different things. Certainly would invite you back on at any time to talk quarterback play. I always appreciate the time you give
awesome,
to
man.
Us and all the information. So thank you.
Appreciate you having me on, man. It's always fun as always, and I look forward to catching up. Thank you.